Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another edition of the Fantasy College Basketball Podcast, brought to you in part by Fantasy Squads and broadcasted live and on demand on Blog Talk Radio. I am, of course, your host, self-proclaimed ambassador and survivor finalist, Walter Waddell. I'm happy to be back. Had a few days off, you know, had to process after Duke's national championship win on Monday. I told you guys we're going to keep pumping out the shows. Less fantasy-centric in our college basketball shows going forward, and more just talking about, you know, transfers, draft entrants, as promised, and kind of give you guys some feedback about how we see it impacting the team they were on, where guys are headed, you know, that type of stuff, and how it'll affect you fantasy-wise going forward. We'll also have some other stuff, other sports shows going forward as well. I have a great guest today. We have the Survive the Madness champion on today, E. Forsty. He is on the line now. Eric, how's it going, my friend?
Hi, can you hear me good?
I believe so, yes. I had some feedback, but I'm good now.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm doing well. Like you, I'm kind of... I'm not a big Duke guy. I was really hoping Wisconsin would win just because they had all those seniors, Frank the Tank, and they had just won two huge games just to get there. And I felt like Duke had a great team, but I mean, their path was so much easier. So, a little disappointing. They were playing so well. They just ran out of gas at the end, but now it's time for the off season. We're kind of fun. You get to see, it seems like every year there's more and more movement with like transfers. And sometimes now people are declaring even though they might not even get drafted. So, you know, the Walter Pitchford specials and all that.
Yeah, that's a little bit confusing. You know, I've had conversations with guys before about guys leaving early and it not really making too much sense. Who are we to decide, honestly? Maybe they are fine with playing in the D League, maybe they're fine with playing in Europe. It's just one of those things. But yeah, I mean, Walter Pitchford, I don't know what he's attempting to do or where he's going to go. That one's confusing. The other one that was confusing to me was Jarrett Stiggers from Houston. I'm not too sure that he's going to be drafted either. And I don't know if you've heard also, but Chris McCullough from Syracuse has declared himself draft as well. And he was out for the season with ACL injury pretty early, so I don't know if you had a chance to hear that one.
Yeah, I have. I'm with you. I never question their decisions. It's their life. And since they don't really make money, I mean, they might get a little bit of stipends, and it might be increasing a little bit with the new rules and all that, but in general, they're not getting paid. So I'm all for them chasing their dreams and all that. So I'm not the kind of guy that questions it, but I just find it funny that sometimes it's like, I think that they think they were going to get drafted and they really just are a little bit like Jahi Carson last year. I followed his Twitter a little bit and he thought he was the best guy ever in the world, but he didn't realize how short he was and that he wasn't really that great. So I guess he's in Australia or somewhere right now, but good for him. So let's talk about North Carolina. Did J.P. Dakota finally, did he officially declare? I know Bryce Johnson is back, and I think that's maybe more important for them than Dakota.
Bryce Johnson and Justin Jackson both, like you said, are back. And he officially, Roy Williams came out either yesterday or today and said that they will be, he will be going. So I don't know if he's hired an agent yet, but it sounds like he's all but gone.
Okay, cool. And I guess Kentucky lost, what, 7 guys today?
Yes.
There weren't really any surprises other than Booker was the most surprising. Actually, I thought he was going to come back. Lyles and Dakar Johnson, they were kind of fringe guys. But, I mean, they'll still be – they'll reload. They still got a number one rookie in Glass, I think. And so that'll be –
yeah,
will be all right next year.
I was pretty surprised about Booker as well. You know, he's a good shooter. He's a little more athletic than some of the guys who make their living being simply shooters like Colt Powell or guys like that.
Yeah.
I think he eventually will become a good player, but he's definitely going to be playing in the D-League. I think he should have definitely come back. But, you know, Calipari, he's very good at the one-and-done system. It works for him. I can't certainly knock this. I did have a long debate. I caused quite a Twitter war earlier this morning with a couple of Kentucky fans, which I found pretty humorous. But Dakari Johnson, Towns as expected, Lyles as expected, Harrison twins, who I don't think are going to be that good at all. They're not very good at defense. Dakari Johnson, who I think will turn into a viable backup big man down the road. Booker will make a living as a shooter. The only guys to really hold back are Marcus Lee and Ulis. You see either of those guys taking a step forward with everybody gone?
Yeah, I actually like both those guys. Marcus Lee hasn't played much, but I remember when Colley Stein went down in last year's tournament, he got a little extra run, and he's a really good rebounder, really good hustle guy. He's got great jumping ability. I don't think he has much post moves, but I think he could definitely take a big step forward if he gets the minutes. And then Ulis, he was playing really good, maybe not the last few games, but he was really stepping up there towards the conference tournament and all that.
Yeah. What about the debate I was having on Twitter was about Calipari being a really good player development. My argument was that he wasn't very good at it. He was mediocre at best. He took advantage of the one-and-done system, and that works for him. The argument that the people had for him was that he was a good player developer because of guys like Rodney Carney and Joey Dorsey. What do you have to say about Calipari's player development skills?
I think they are incomplete. I mean, in general, you got to have a guy more than a year to really make much of an impact on them. I mean, some of the guys stay longer, like you said, Carney and all that. But I think he does some developing. I mean, he is a coach, but I think other programs do a lot better job of developing their guys. Like Frank Kaminsky, he was his first year, he barely played at all. I mean, he was a prospect that only got offers from like Bradley and Northwestern and Wisconsin. So, I mean, I'm not going to say he's horrible at it, but I definitely would take a bunch of other coaches in terms of development. He's a great recruiter. Some people say he does some things kind of shady. Who knows? I'm not going to speculate too much about that. But, yeah, I hate to say it, but he's kind of a babysitter. He gets these guys in there, and he makes sure they, are happy enough to play as a team. And he does a decent job at what he does, but in the tournament games, he's just not very great in-game coach. Like, who would let Aaron and Andrew Harrison take all the shots down the stretch when Towns was just getting anything he wanted in the beginning of the second half? So just stick with what's working.
Yeah, exactly. I don't really understand how anyone can say that he's a master of player development, if you will. But he's definitely a grade A recruiter. I cannot deny that whatsoever. He just for whatever reason. Guys flourish after they enter the NBA with him because he gets the talent, you know, and maybe it's not a fair assessment because, you know, everybody is one and done and it takes a few years. Maybe that's why, you know, I'm of the opinion that Tom Izzo is such a great player developer because he has guys longer. You know, he turns out the stars of guys who are heralded. You know, guys like Frank Kaminsky for Bo Ryan, you know, there are other examples. I guess the only true way to measure that would be to have, you know, same playing field, same skill level players go to each coach and stay with them for multiple years, and then we can truly judge it. So maybe I can't say Calipari's horrible at it, but we certainly can't say he's the best at it like some people are saying, and that's kind of where I get frustrated with it. So like I said, grade A recruiter, player developer, I don't know. I don't think he should be taking credit for Eric Bledsoe either. That was one of the other arguments the guy had, was that Eric Bledsoe was, you know, turned into a superstar, and this was well after he was out of Calipari's program, so I don't give him any of the credit for that one.
Yep. I 100% agree. Eric Bledsoe, he really got – I mean, he was kind of playing under Chris Paul's shadow, so we didn't really get to see him completely, but he really stepped up last couple of years, and, I don't think he really got any better in his time at Kentucky. That year it was the Cousins show with John Wall. But, I think Bledsoe was great, but he's gotten great on his own.
Yeah, for sure. Keeping up with the rest of the list of guys who have declared early, I'm just going to kind of go through a few of these and get your opinion. We'll start with your Arizona guy. Brandon Ashton did declare earlier today, late last night. And also Rondae Harris-Jefferson, which a lot of us know. The one guy that did decide to come back was Caleb Tarzewski. How do you kind of see things shaking out for Arizona next year without Ashley, without Harris-Jefferson? I think we're still waiting on Stanley Johnson. I'm not sure if you've heard anything about him, but how do you feel about Arizona next year?
I'd be shocked if Stanley Johnson came back. I guess there's a small chance, but yeah, I think Zeus will be the only starter back. Losing TJ and Rondae will be the biggest impact. I mean, Stanley's really good too. But those two won't really be the biggest impact just because the defense is going to be really hard to – the last couple of years it's been at really high levels. So, I mean, Sean Miller is a great coach, especially on the defensive side of the ball, so they won't be horrible on defense. But in the past, I would just almost never play opponents in DFS against Arizona. But next year, in certain opportunities, it might be a little different. Zeus, I always think big men take longer to develop. And he actually started playing basketball at a pretty old age compared to most people. So I think he could continue developing. His biggest issue is his hands. He fumbles the ball a little bit too much. He's a bit turnover prone. But he started playing better towards the end of the year, so he'll be a good anchor down low. And with Dušan Ristić, that'll be a good 1-2 punch. And then we'll be getting Ryan Anderson, who transferred in from Boston College. I don't know if you remember him, but he was pretty dang good at Boston College. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Brandon Ashley.
He was a 14-7 guy. So he put up stats.
So, yeah, I kind of expect him to play a lot like Brandon Ashley. He's got some range. I don't know if he'll be taking as many three-pointers, but he can shoot if you sag off him too much. And so he'll be a high-energy guy. And then the big guy that'll be coming in is Alonzo Trier. And he's like a 5-star recruit. Depends on the service that you see, but he's around top 10, top 15 guy. And he is an elite scorer. The one thing that I like to follow in the summer for recruits is the Nike EYBL because it's the top competition. And I actually put a little bit of stock in the stats. I mean, you can't completely. I mean, it's still high school AAU, so they're not trying It's a little sloppy and all that, and coaching's out there. But he led the scoring by a lot, and he gets to the free throw line. He's really good at that, and he makes them a lot. His playing style kind of reminds me of Carmelo Anthony a little bit. I mean, I'm not saying he's the next Carmelo or anything, but he can create his own shot, which has kind of been a little bit of a problem for Arizona last in Sean Miller's tenure, other than like Derek Williams. We've had good offenses, but maybe not a go-to scorer that we can have create his own shot late in the game and stuff like that. So, and then the big question mark will be point guard. Parker Jackson Cartwright has played well in the minutes he's played. Obviously, with TJ, he's going to get most of the minutes. So we didn't get to see him too much in, like, big situations. But he has surprised me. A lot of people thought, well, he's so short, he'll be a liability on defense and he won't be able to see over guys and stuff like that. But he has really great vision and great handle. So, and on defense, he's a pest. He's a, like, mosquito. Like, he'll stay in front of you. And so I was really impressed with his defense this year. And then Kadeem Allen is another guy that he's a JUCO transfer from last year. He redshirted this year. And I'm excited about him. He's kind of an in-between a one and a two. He's more of a one in that he can handle the ball really well and drive and set other people up. But so he's a scorer. He's maybe not a three-point shooter too much. He gets to line and gets, layups in the mid-range more so. But so he'll be good. And then Ray Smith is another guy that there's, a lot of incoming players. And I'm hoping that they also get the guy from San Francisco. I'm blanking on his name at the moment. But he could be an impact transfer. So,
I was going to ask you if they're going to get Rab. Is he going to choose California, or I'm hearing that he's going to go to Arizona?
I'm hearing that he's more likely to stay home at Cal. He's kind of a quieter kid, a little shy, kind of keeps himself. He's a smart kid, but I get the sense that he's interested in staying home, playing in front of his family and friends. So it's not 100% the Cal, but I think he's leaning that way.
Gotcha. The other players from Louisville, talk about them next. Trez Harrell, he's declared. We definitely expected that. And then Terry Rozier, I believe he signed an agent, so he's gone. That was one I was a little disappointed in. He's definitely going to be a nice player. I don't know if he'll be right away. I think he's projected to be a mid-round first-round pick. You got an opinion about both of those guys in the pros?
I think they're both. Actually, I'm not really sure. I'm not very good at projecting into the NBA. They both did really good this year. This is the kind of guy that we were talking about. How Terry Rozier, he kind of was under the shadow of Russ Smith the previous couple of years, or I don't. Maybe this was the second year. So last year, and so, but. If you watch the games or anything, you could tell that he had the skills and stuff. So he's the kind of guy that benefits from an opening opportunity. So his price was definitely underpriced, like during the beginning of the year, and I used him almost any time because he was money for a while there. So I think it'll open up opportunities. They got Trey Lewis from Cleveland State, I believe. What position does he play? Do you know?
I think he's kind of like a combo guard. I think he does most of his work on the wing and two guard, but he might need to run the offense a little bit for them too.
Yeah, I think they'll probably take a step back a little bit. I mean, Montrez he's just a beast, so he might be even harder to replace than Rozier. But, Patino always finds a way to to get it together, so it'll be interesting.
Yeah, and they're, yeah, I mean, they had a couple guys transfer. I believe Shaquan Aaron and Hill are both transferring, so he's going to be light on players. Their roster is going to be completely different. It makes me feel pretty enticed by Quentin Snyder. I believe he will probably be a bit underpriced heading into next year. Could you see him making a major step up and having a very high usage rate for them early on?
Yeah, I watched him play. He was the point guard in name, and he definitely did a lot of stuff. But at the same time, Rozier kind of was the main ball handler. So he definitely probably had the ball in his hands a little bit more. I think he'll develop. It might take some time. He might not be a go-to scorer. He's more of a assist man, and he might be able to get some steals and get to the free throw line. And so he might not be their go-to scorer or anything, but he has a solid chance to be underpriced at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about our friend Johnny's favorite team, LSU. They're two major four. They're going to be a very different team next year. They're two top guys, Jarrell Martin and Jordan Nickey, both have declared. Right now, it looks like Jarrell Martin is projected to be late first, early second. And Jordan Nickey, according to SB Nation, has him undrafted. So that's a little surprising. I thought he would get drafted maybe in the second. Probably a guy, if he does go undrafted, he'll get a call to a summer league real quick. LSU, as we know, has a couple recruits coming in, Blake Nee, Simmons. They're going to be exciting next year. I think they'll still be fast-paced, but maybe more of a transformation into a guard-heavy team as opposed to a post-heavy team. You think that they'll still be a tournament squad without those two guys?
Yeah, obviously those guys were some of the most reliable fantasy producers for us this past year, and even the year before, they were pretty good. So, I personally think that Mickey should get drafted. I mean, I've seen him play, and obviously stats speak for themselves. He's a really good athlete, and so I think he'll make an NBA team. But in terms of next year, I haven't watched Ben Simmons play, but, I mean, he's got rave reviews, number one prospect, so he's sure to make an immediate impact. And Tim Quarterman, I've watched him play. He is a really good player. He does a little bit of everything. He's got those long arms, the long wingspan, so he can get assists, he can shoot, he can drive to the hoop, and he's very good on defense, which is big on FanDuel. He gets those steals, occasional blocks. So he's somebody that he'll probably be priced, around 7,000 or whatnot, but I think he can reach that value, especially in the beginning of the year. And then it'll be interesting to see if Blakeney takes up enough spot that, I don't know how Jalen Patterson, I don't know if he'll be able to get any more minutes. Probably not. I mean, he already started playing a lot at the end of the year, so you might want to be wary of him if Blakeney takes over some of his role. And then I guess they have trying to think of his name, Hornsby, right? They still have him for one more year?
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Yeah, they're pretty loaded in the wings and in the backcourt. So, it'll be interesting. I don't know. I guess Ben Simmons will have to play power forward so that they can get, three guards in the lineup. I know they have this guy, Albert Robertson, that
I was just about to bring him up.
I've never actually seen him play because every time I watch, he's on the bench. But he had a pretty good rating out of high school, so you never know. He could step up a little bit.
Well, he's 7'1" and 300 pounds, so he's probably the de facto center. They actually have another guy, Darcy Malone. And he's 7 feet also, so one of those guys will definitely start at center for them, and I would probably guess they're going to be very cheap to start. So keep those guys on your DFS roster at least early on.
Yeah, definitely.
The other team I want to talk about here for early entrance before we start talking about some transfers, Kansas. They'll be losing Kelly Oubre Jr., who I love. Really didn't get a chance to showcase himself too much. I mean, the minutes he did get, he did some good things. And then, of course, that winner situation at the end there with Cliff Alexander not being eligible. He's, of course, jumping to the NBA as well. Kansas does have some nice recruits coming in. Bill Self, he has the ability to, you know, reload quite a bit. He does a lot of the one-and-done stuff, too, not quite to the degree of our friend Calipari. Frank Mason is returning. Perry Ellis is returning. And your favorite DFS option, of course, I'm being sarcastic, Wayne Selden will be back. How do you think that Kansas will respond with the loss of their two freshman studs?
That's a good question. I think part of it is that Bill Self didn't even play him a ton of minutes anyway, so maybe their impact isn't losing them isn't quite as bad as a lot of these other teams, you know, like Duke and they played there, got freshmen as many minutes as they could handle. So it won't be quite as big as some other teams. And Frank Mason, he's a very consistent guy. He's somebody that I like to use in cash games because his floor is pretty high. Selden, you know, he has potential, and I'm not going to write him off. He's definitely struggled last year. And I'm not going to take him the first game next year. I'll have to see how he does, but we'll see. At least his price doesn't seem to rise, so. And then, down low, who do they got coming in to replace Alexander?
Oh, his name escaping me also, but he was a McDonald's All-American as well.
Oh, was he the guy from Ohio? I'm blanking on Carlton Bragg or something like that.
Yeah, Bragg. Yeah, he's gonna be on.
Yeah, he looks pretty good. He looks. It'll be interesting because he seems more like a power forward than a center. But Perry Ellis is more of a power forward than a center too. So, in the college though, that's not a big problem to play him at the five. So, yeah, I'm not a big Kansas guy. I tend to avoid them in DFS. I can't get a good read. Bill Self sometimes is a little random with the minutes. But, you know, it's always a team that develops well over the course of the year. But I've noticed one thing with them. They're always way better at home. They're always so good. I mean, the Fog Allen is one of the toughest places to play. And on the road, they sometimes don't play the same.
He does mess around with their minutes. They'll probably be getting, you know, Landon Lucas, probably some more Hunter Nicholson, guys like that who aren't great, but they're probably going to, you know, eat up some of those minutes. We saw Landon Lucas actually was halfway decent in some of the spot starts that he had. Like you mentioned, Carlton Bragg, a big-time freshman coming in. I'm kind of interested in their European kid that they got. He actually did pretty well in a small sample size. He was actually pretty touted coming from you know, his country. Makaluk, or however you say his name, I'll have to learn that one. Next year, I actually think he's going to get some minutes next year. He's a very good shooter, and if he bulks up a little bit, he might be a sneaky DFS option in the future.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. A lot of these guys that come over from Europe are very polished, especially offensively. It's like, I mean, I don't like to rag on the America's AAU system, but I think they get coached up a little bit better over there, really work on the fundamentals. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him take a big step forward.
Yeah, and I'm also just reading, I don't know how closely you follow the UNC Charlotte team. They had actually a pretty decent center by the name of Mike Thorne Jr. On their team last year. He's a graduate transfer, and it looks like he's visited with Bill Self twice, and once with his family and once by himself. Sounds like Pitt and Illinois are trying to grab him as well, but if Kansas lands him, I would imagine he's going to slide right in and be their starting center. Like I said, if you don't know who he is, you should check him out because he's a pretty decent player.
Yeah, I watched some video on him when I heard that he was grad transferring. I think he would probably be better off. I don't know. All those teams, I think, have some other centers, too. So, but he's a very high-energy guy, so that would help their team for sure.
Yeah, he was a 10-7 guy last year. So that's almost a double-double.
Yeah.
So that's got me interested for sure.
sure. Yeah, and they got Mark Price as a coach. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He went to my dad's alma mater, Georgia Tech, and he's one of the best shooters of all time, like in college and NBA. Like, his free throw percentages were, like, crazy good, like mid-90s sometimes.
Oh, yeah, he was such a good free throw shooter. I remember that. We're kind of dating ourselves. I don't know. Some of our listeners probably don't know who that is. But, he was an amazing free throw shooter,
super automatic.
And I had heard that he was coaching there. Early on in the season, UNC Charlotte was on TV like three or four times, so I got to see their team a little bit. You know, I knew of Thorne. So there's a couple other recruits that they're in the mix for, too. Check Diallo, who watched the McDonald's All-American game. He dominated. There's talk of him possibly going to Kansas. Brandon Ingram, who's my favorite guy right now. He's got the super long arms, really lethal three-point shooter. I watch YouTube videos of him all the time. It sounds like they would be competing. He's a North Carolina native, so UNC or Duke is most likely where he's going to go, but I know he's visited Kansas a couple of times. So according to their site, they're trying to get him as well. Definitely uphill battle for that. So a couple guys to keep an eye on. Let's talk a little bit about transfers. One transfer that I just found out about a couple hours ago, John Williams III has decided to transfer from Missouri. It sounds like my guy Tom Izzo, who has his company, is in the mix for him. He, of course, have to sit out according to NCAA rules. He is a Michigan native. Illinois is in the mix for him, too, as well as Arizona. However, one of the conditions of his transfer now recently is that he can't transfer to another SEC school, Big 12, Illinois, or Arizona. So now Arizona's out of the mix. So it sounds like his services could be going to Michigan State, which is very exciting. How do you feel about all that?
Yeah, I heard that he was going to be transferring I think Michigan State would be a great spot for him. Dawson, he's done there, right? And so, he would have to sit out anyway. But, yeah, I think Tom Izzo is a really – I mean, obviously, he's just a really great coach. And he was a good player for them. I almost felt bad for him because 2 years ago, he was pretty good too. But Jabari Brown and Clarkson, all those guards were just – taking all the shots. Some of them were just bad shots too. And then this past year, he just had so little talent around him that, you know, defenses could key on him. So he got off to a pretty good start in the out of conference play. And I remember using him, especially at first, he was really underpriced. But yeah, he's got a lot of potential. I could see him definitely taking off, especially if he lands in a spot like Michigan State.
Yeah, so we unfortunately won't get to use him next season, but just somebody to throw out there and keep an eye on the future.
Yeah.
The other news that's come down, although the school hasn't officially said yet, this one hits close to home for me, is that Nigel Williams, one of the local summer league guys that's apparently close with him, has announced on Twitter that he also will be transferring. I've heard quite a few rumors. It sounds like UNLV is a destination for him. I don't know if I see that one or not. I'm sure there'll be some restrictions on which school he's allowed to transfer to, or he may make the jump to the NBA as well. The thing with Nigel Williams Goff is, you know, he had the chance. You know, now could be the man. Washington has a very, very nice class coming in. I talked about it on the last show. I think that he would have, you know, really gelled all that together. I'm a little puzzled by his decision to leave. You know, where do you kind of see him going? Do you think he'll jump to the pros, or do you think he'll go to another program?
Yeah, that one really surprised me a lot. I feel bad for Omar. I mean, I don't know what happened. Maybe he just wanted to change the scenery or something. I actually do think there's a decent chance he goes to UNLV. He played for Finlay Prep in Henderson, Nevada, which is right next to Las Vegas. And there's some connections between Finlay and the coaching staff at UNLV now. So that would probably be the most likely destination in my estimation. He could go pro. I mean, it wouldn't be he might have to work hard to kind of get into the league and whatnot. I mean, he's a solid player. He doesn't blow you away with athleticism exactly, but he's a very smart player. So I mean, if he goes to UNLV, unfortunately, FanDuel doesn't do Mountain West schools at the moment, so that'd be kind of a bummer.
Yeah, they might down the road, you're right. That would be a bummer. I'm really kind of disappointed that he's deciding to leave. A lot of people are now saying that Romar is going to lose his job. I don't think so. I think he's going to get a chance to coach the recruiting class that he pulled in. They may be an NIT team this year, but that group, once they start clicking and get some experience, I think they'll be a tournament team. So I'm not too worried about him getting fired. Let's talk a little bit about some transfers. You already mentioned Ryan Anderson, but four other transfers that will be eligible this season for us to use for DFS purposes. Two of which transferred from West Virginia last season. The first one being Terry Henderson. He is going to be going to NC State. NC State is only using Ralston Turner from their Sweet 16 squad. I would imagine that Henderson's going to slide right in at small forward and take Turner's spot there. He's 6'4", you know, made 47 three-point shots 2 years ago, right around 38%, and he averaged right around 12 points for them. And that was on a team with, with Aaron Harris, who also transferred, and Grant Staten. So Henderson and NC State has some intrigue. You foresee him, you know, kind of filling in that Turner role for them?
Actually, I've never really seen him play, so his stats were pretty decent. I think Aaron Harris has a better shot at being a more of an impact DFS guy. But, Ralston Turner, he started getting a pretty big role, so somebody's going to have to step up, and he definitely seems like a guy that is ready to take on that challenge.
And speaking of Aaron Harris, he's actually headed to Michigan State. You mentioned a very good three-point shooter. He's got a lot of confidence. He had 89 three-pointers made 2 years ago at West Virginia, and he shot just over a 40% clip. So I'm excited about him. You know, Denzel Valentine will be back. Those two are going to make a very formidable duo. I know Tum Tum Yarn is somebody that people were excited about, even though he hasn't really done much. Bryn Forbes. Sounds like Michigan State is going to have a lot of perimeter players. Not really sure what their coach is going to look like just yet, but here is Michigan State. I mean, you know, that might be somebody who starts out underpriced and can win you some money in DFS early.
Yeah, I like Aaron Harris. He was really getting good there, especially towards the end of his last, not this past year, but the year before. They're going to need some offense, I think he'll be a big part of the new age of their team. I'm not impressed with Tum Tum in terms of DFS. The reason is he's a really quick point guard. He's got a good handle on things. He can be an assist guy, but he just can't shoot, like, at all. Like, I've seen him play, and he just has no shot from any – even close up, he struggles. So, I mean, you know, it's something that could slowly develop over time, but I just don't see him doing enough in terms of points to be much of an option for us in DFS.
No, I agree with you. The other one, Seth Allen, he transferred from Maryland last season. He is going to be eligible this year. He was going to Virginia Tech to play for Buzz Williams. He was somebody who could potentially be all ACC player. He's very good. He had 13 points, 3 assists, 2 boards at Maryland a couple years ago. I think he's going to be an underrated player for them. They did have Lee Smith from Virginia Tech as opposed to transfer, so Allen, I believe, will have a starting role. I'm excited about him. I don't think he's going to put up huge numbers, but I think he might be one of those 6'1", 6'2", middle-tier Freddie Mason-style players that's just consistent, gets you 20, 25 fantasy points, and nothing less, nothing more. I'm okay with that. You know much about Seth Allen?
Yeah, I used him a little bit at Maryland. He can definitely score. He's got a nice range. I'm actually really high on Virginia Tech for the future. Their freshmen, they really grew and started to impress me by the end of the year. They have a handful of guys, and they kind of took turns stepping up. I think Virginia Tech is headed in the right direction with Buzz Williams, and I think Seth Allen will fit in really well, especially as you said, with Smith taking off, that really opens up a good spot for him. They, I like a couple of their other freshmen. I don't have my computer on me. I'm kind of blanking on their names and all that. But I think Virginia Tech will be a team on the rise.
Especially they're not going to be. Oh, for sure. They're not going to be as bad as they were this season. They're going to be a team. I mean, Buzz Williams is a great coach. I think we can all agree on that. And, he's got a nice class coming in. Nailed the Seth Allen transfer. I think he's built a nice core there. I think they're going to be much better this season.
Yep. Speaking of Buzz Williams, isn't Deontay Burton, isn't he transferring to your boy Fred Hoiberg's squad, Iowa State?
He is. Yeah, so he'll be eligible in December.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, he's kind of a bigger, you know, he's kind of a big, I guess he's a guard, he's kind of a small forward, but he's kind of a strong, a little bit, he's a little bigger. But I like his game. He had a few good games in the beginning of the year, and then I guess he decided to transfer. I guess maybe he didn't like the new coach. But, yeah, I think you never know if Iowa State, I mean, they still have Niang, so I don't know what his role will be at the beginning, but maybe in the future he can be an impact player for them.
Yeah, they've got everybody coming back aside from Dustin Ho, who has graduated, mm-hmm. but Niang, Morris, McKay, all the integral pieces are back for them. You're right, he's probably not going to slot in right away, but he's definitely going to be a part of their, what I think will be seven, maybe eight-man rotation. And they also have Alex Cook will be eligible immediately. Now, I know talking to you, you're not very high on Alex. What don't you like about his game and don't see him as a DFS option potentially?
I mean, I looked at his stats. They're a little bit better than I thought, so maybe I just got him on a bad game. But I've seen him play because I watched him Pac-12. And I don't know. I guess I can't sell him too short. He was only a freshman. But when he decided to transfer, I kind of was surprised. I mean, I guess whenever there's a coaching change, it makes sense and whatnot. I just don't think there will be I just think there's too – I mean, it's going to be a fast-paced offense, but I think there just might be too many mouths to feed. So he might be more of a GPP guy that has a few blow-up games, but I think he'll be good. Well, the problem is Monte Morris is just so good, and but he's good, but he might not be good enough to go to the NBA. So and they had that guy cluster transfer probably partially because he – saw the writing on the wall. I guess he can play the two guard a little bit. I think Nav Long is still there though, and I'll definitely take a closer look at him. I don't want to sell him short. But Oregon State, I just gotta say, they have a really good recruiting class coming in. And, you know, GP2, he's going to be there back next year. I think they're going to be a sneaky team next year and in the future with the Tinkles.
Yeah, they've actually built a nice program. Just kind of like, you know, Virginia Tech's going to be on the rise, and they were a doormat. Oregon State's got, you know, an integral part of their team, Gary Payton the second, who I love. You know, Malcolm Duvivier, Langston, they've got a few pieces that are nice, and you mentioned the recruiting class that's coming in, and it's pretty good as well. Some of the teams in the Pac-12 that are normally powers are kind of maybe going to experience a slight down year. I think the Pac-12 is going to be absolutely wide open, so Oregon State can be a team that sneaks into the tournament, and you don't want to see. I think that FanDuel and DraftKings will be smart on Gary Payton and have him priced above $8,000 to start. In November, he was 5-1 to start, which is awesome because no one knew who he was except for a select few. Those days are over. We'll have to find a new GP2 to start in November. But you're right, Oregon State would be good. Going back to Iowa State for a second, I actually think that they might run a lineup that looks like Monte Morris, Talis Cook, Naz Long, and Niang and McKay. It might be a little bit of a shorter lineup, but I think that Cook should start. He's a big part of what they're going to be doing, and they've been talking about him a lot. So I actually think he does start. But, yeah, Oregon State is definitely excited about them as well. Pac-12, as I said, is going to be kind of a down year. Your Arizona guys are reloading. I think they'll be tough. UCLA, I'm not really sure what to think about them. Washington will be down. The Cougars will be down. Cal might be pretty good if they get Ivan Rabb. You agree that Pac-12 seems like it's pretty wide open this season?
Yeah, I agree. Cal actually, they might actually get two stud big men. Caleb Swinigan, I don't know. I think he announced it sometime this week. Apparently, his mentor or whatever is tight with Kunzo. So don't be surprised if they get both Swinigan and Rab. And if they do, that would be big because I don't know. If Ty Wallace stays, that would really – I mean, their lineup, their starting lineup would be big time. And they also have a guy named Stephen Domingo, the transfer from Georgetown. And he's a really good shooter. I actually saw him play a little bit in AAU. He didn't really get much of a chance to shine at Georgetown, but he's somebody that, Cal could be pretty loaded next year. But, yeah, there's going to be some big departures. Obviously, Daylon Wright, nobody can replace him single-handedly. So Utah still has a good core coming back, but Daylon Wright, you know, he's tough to replace. Joe Young, tough to replace. Even Kevon Looney, so the talent might be a little bit lower, especially at the beginning of the year. I noticed Pac-12, it's weird how it seems like a lot of times in the out-of-conference, you know, some teams just aren't, they kind of have some let-down games, and it seems like by the end of the year, though, that the conference gets better as a whole, and so a lot of times people, like, rag on them. But we saw this past year that Oregon, Utah, and Arizona, three teams were in the Sweet 16, and I think there were no Big East teams. So, anyway, I want to talk about another guy, Semi Ojeleyi. I don't know if that's how you spell his name, but he's coming from Duke to SMU. And I don't know if he'll be – he might not be eligible until January. I'm not sure if he'll be getting here or not. And I think he's going to end up being a really good player. I mean, you can never tell for sure. But I really liked his – I think his AAU high school stats. I think he's got a potential to really contribute in a lot of different categories.
Yeah, that's a good call out. I mean, SMU is a good squad, and he could potentially, as you mentioned, be a solid player for them. Anyone who's been at Duke, obviously, you know, is a heralded player, and if they're going to don a Duke jersey wherever they go, you would think that they would be a pretty good player. Speaking of Duke, have you heard any news about maybe somebody taking a chance on Rashid Suleiman, or is he pretty much done in college?
That's a good question. I haven't heard any chatter on him. I don't know. That'll be interesting. Don't they have Sean Obi transfer from Rice? Is he going to try to help replace Okafor next year?
Yeah, I think he's eligible right away, too.
Yeah, he's obviously no Okafor, and he's a little bit raw still probably, but going up against him in practice for a year and getting into the system, he could be a decent player.
Let me pull up the stats. He's 6'9", 265 pound big man. He averaged 9.3 rebounds and 11.4 points. So I think he'll be a pretty good player for them.
Yeah, he'll be kind of like Emile Jefferson was in the beginning of the year. Not a go-to scorer or anything like that, but he'll get rebounds, maybe a few blocks, some putbacks and stuff like that.
Yeah, he will probably rack up the rebounds because of the fact that the guys coming in for Duke, Kennard, and a couple other players like Greg Maron and stuff, like to shoot, and they shoot at a high clip, so maybe there won't be as many rebounds, but any that are missed, I would imagine.
Maybe defensive rebounds.
Yeah, for sure. The other team I've been talking about at length, Maryland. They've got Robert Carter coming in. He averaged 11 and 8 two years ago at Georgia Tech. I just love Maryland. I've talked about them on every show for the last couple of weeks. They're going to be loaded. They're going to be one of the most stackable DFS squads. If they're able to get the kid from Drexel as well, their starting five might be as good as anyone's in the country.
Yeah, they're going to be really good next year. The only thing that worries me a little bit is they might be a little too loaded for DFS purposes. When you have that many great players, sometimes, you know, it kind of limits each other. You know, they might take turns. But I've seen Robert Carter play a lot. He's a very strong presence down low. I remember a couple years ago when he was with that Miller guy on Georgia Tech. I don't know if you ever used him, but I used him a lot down the stretch, and that guy just had a really good end to his career. Trimble back is huge. I don't think Lehman back is really that big of a deal. I know you're higher on him than Rob is,
and
I'm kind of more Rob's side. I think he's kind of a guy that I think he'll be just more of a role player. I mean, he stepped up when Des Wells went down. I'm not too high on him. But
with Des Wells gone, I'm thinking that Lehman's going to take that higher usage rate and he's going to get more shots and he's going to be more a part of the offense. I'm certainly not thinking he's going to be. I don't know if you remember that game against Oklahoma State right before conference play when Wells still was in back and he dropped like a 40 fantasy point game on FanDuel. I'm probably not expecting that, but I think he's going to be a more consistent presence. I think he had a lot of confidence issues there at the end, which I'm hoping he'll pull out of. But he'll definitely be one of my preseason, ballsy, this guy's going to be a good fantasy option, and he'll probably go over my head. But you got to take a stand somewhere and make some picks, and I think he'll be all right.
Yeah, I think if Damian Lee comes in, that might hurt him too. Because, I mean, obviously Drexel is different, you have to kind of step up more, but he was pretty high usage there. Trimble, he likes the, He's a scoring, shooting, point guard, so to speak. So, and then the big men down low will get playing touches. I think he'll be an all right player. I just don't know if he'll get enough touches and, usage to really be a consistent guy.
Yeah, I'm also hearing on Damian Lee that, of course, Mr. Pacino might be in the mix with him at Louisville. So that would be a good destination spot for him as well, because they would probably just give him the reins right away and allow him and Trey Lewis to be one of the most formidable backcourt in the NCAA. So that would be a pretty intriguing one as well.
Yeah, I'm rooting for Damian Lee. I'm an Arizona fan, as you know, and we played Drexel in the preseason NIT tournament 2 years ago, and unfortunately he tore his ACL in that game, and I remember that, and I was like, oh, that's a bummer. And it turned out that obviously last year he really blew up. He really took off and became a good player. So I'm rooting for him.
So who is your Arizona guy, what team are you most looking forward to, at least initially, targeting for DFS?
That's a good question. I haven't thought too much about it, but I think one thing that we should do is we should look at who's leaving. Guys like Marshall Henderson from Ole Miss, he just took up so many shots. Just the fact that he left the team opened up a bunch of opportunities for people. And the guy that was they put at forward, even though he was like 6 foot or less, blank on the name. But anyway, yeah, so when he left, lots of opportunities for players. I talked to you on Twitter, Askia Booker, he's going to be leaving. So that opens up opportunities for guys like Josh Fortune, the Collier guy, and I don't know what's going on with Xavier Johnson. I don't know if he's seeing eye to eye with their coach, but I think his name is Dustin Thomas. He started really stepping up at the end of last year, so he's a guy to keep an eye on too, especially with Jaren Hopkins transferring out as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting call. And I don't know if people remember Josh Fortune because Bryce Cotton was such a stud that he played with Bryce Cotton, but he actually wasn't horrible, and he was part of that squad. That team was memorable, not only because Bryce Cotton was such an insane DFS player and stud, but just the fact that the starters played basically the entire game. And he had about 8 points, two or three assists. You know, not great. The fact that he could be that durable to play the entire game, you know, is an intriguing thing. So I'd actually forgotten that Fortune went to Colorado until you mentioned that earlier. So I'm going to take a closer look at their roster for sure.
Yeah, and in addition to that, Texas, obviously just the fact that they got rid of Rick Barnes is a big plus. But the fact that they got him Shaka Smart in addition to it is kind of exciting. I like the style he plays. The only downside is sometimes players don't get the, you know, the Ed Cooley type minutes. But if he recruits some guys that are, you know, fit his system, you know, there could be a lot of steals and just a fast tempo. So that's kind of exciting because I kind of root for Texas, but it's kind of hard to deal with Rick Barnes at the coach, as you know.
Yeah, it's completely changed my whole, you know, I don't want anything to do with Texas, so now I'm intrigued by them, and now it's, I don't want anything to do with Tennessee, and I'm okay with that because I was a big Josh Richardson fan. He's graduated now, so I don't really have anything to look at them for, and especially with the way he runs their minutes and everything. So I'm clearly away from Tennessee and interested in Texas, especially since the guys that Barnes have recruited, and Barnes is a great recruiter. I mean, he's not a very good coach, but he's brought talent. The guys that committed to Texas are still going to come to Texas and be a part of the program. So a nice start for him. One of them is Eric Davis. He's the 45th ranked recruit on ESPN's Big Board. He's a 6'3 shooting guard, four-star player. So it's a good start for him to keep some of these guys and show us what he can do in a bigger conference.
Yeah. Speaking of Josh Richardson, that guy was one of my favorite players. Not this past season, but the year before. I don't know if you remember, but they had a couple guys that were more high usage and really good players, but he really just kept getting better and better, and his price wasn't quite catching up to him. And that's when it was one of my first good runs, so I'll always be partial to him. But yeah, now that he's gone, there isn't too much on Tennessee's roster to get too excited about anyway, so Rick Barnes going there, I guess, isn't too bad. I think Auburn, with Bruce Pearl, that'll be an interesting team to track. They'll be losing Mason and Ross Miller. And so Bowers, if they can get somebody, I think part of his problem was he did really good at the beginning of the year, but they didn't really have any other guys to help him out too much. He had to do so much. Sometimes he just got worn down or in foul trouble. So that's another team that I'll be looking at. I think they got a pretty good recruiting class coming in.
Yeah, they've got two or three guys in the top ESPN 100 coming in. So through the effect of having Bruce Pearl as coach and recruiter already being felt for them.
Yep.
Any teams that you're looking at maybe picking on early on and taking guys against?
Exploiting. That's a good question.
Yeah.
The part of the problem is we don't have really the schedule for next year out, and you know, you can do a lot of. It's easier to exploit a little bit in the beginning of the year. I don't know. There's just certain coaches that kind of, like, take Washington State for instance. Ernie Cannon, he's complete opposite of the coach before. He just really turned up the tempo. And he's more of an offensive guy. So teams like that, it almost doesn't matter what players they have. They're kind of good to play against. I don't know. There'll be a lot of teams, a lot of good teams that'll be losing. You know, a lot of the top defensive teams will be losing guys. So, yeah, we might. I'm not saying that we'll be able to go, you know, exploit teams like Arizona and Louisville and those teams, but you might not be as afraid to go against them. Yeah, that's something I'll have to look into more. It's kind of a relative thing because as you know, like, you know, in the shorter slate, especially down in the NCAA tournament, like, pretty much all the teams had pretty good defenses, but if you're choosing to go up against Kentucky or versus another team, you're going to, you know, on a relative basis, it's always good to look at, you know, tempo and how they are on defense.
Yeah, and it's, of course, yeah, extremely early, so we don't really know. I'm just kind of putting you on the spot there just to kind of get your thoughts. I know that you're going into full baseball mode, and a lot of other people are, but I'm always thinking about college basketball and trying to continue to keep an edge. It's kind of been eye-opening. You know, take for granted the sick run that you were on. I had a really good November, December, and you just get kind of used to breaking even or winning, you know, a good chunk of the time in the sport. And then you play Major League Baseball for 3 days, get your ass kicked, and realize, wow, we really do have an edge in CBB when you play a sport like MLB and you throw out what you think is a good team and you put up 20 and finish, you know, 8,000 out of 10,000 people in a tournament. It's pretty humbling.
Yeah, I totally agree. Different people are better at different sports. But I think, in general, baseball is just a very random sport. I mean, you know, it's hard. You know, it's completely different than basketball because, you know, a great player can just have a bad day, you know, just strike out a bunch, or a great pitcher can just have an off day, and, you know, you can't really predict it. So, baseball, yeah, it's tough. I'm getting into it a little bit. First 2 days I lost a little bit, and then yesterday I did good because I got Carlos Carrasco and some A's stats, my favorite team in baseball. A lot of people take it for granted. Obviously, a lot of us guys were getting a pretty big edge in college basketball this season, but I remember I played 2 years previous to that, and I was kind of just a break-even guy. So it's something that you got to work at. Like you said, beginning of the year, if you do, you know, your homework, you do a little research, follow teams, kind of project which players will step up next year. There's a lot of opportunity first couple months. And so, yeah, I agree with you. It's a little bit humbling to get back into the real world, I guess.
Remember what it's like to lose more than you win. I will say that I've had a little bit of success in branching out, trying other sports. NHL, which is largely about line stacking and getting a goalie that shuts people out. I've had some success and quite fun with NHL. NBA is just kind of like, you know, Rob and I have joked about it before. You do head-to-heads in NBA, and you're playing two-on-two and three-on-three because everybody's on the same guy. So that one's not quite as fun for me. I definitely already missed college basketball, and November cannot get here soon enough.
Yep, I'm right there with you. This past season, I definitely looked into, you know, kind of like projecting the rotations, depth charts, just kind of seeing what players – might look like, and kind of looked into like guys like Gary Payton Jr. I looked at his JUCO stats and was like, wow, these are really good. I mean, this guy has a good opportunity to do a lot of good things, especially on a team that needs a guy to step up. So, yeah, it's going to be tough for about 5-6 months to not have college basketball, but this is the time where we can kind of slowly build an edge just with knowledge and stuff. So, you know, it might be a good idea for some people to just forget about for a little while, just to get a break and focus on other things. But I'll definitely, I won't completely turn my eye on the news and just eyeing how the teams will be shaping up.
It is good to, as you mentioned, kind of take a mental break and not worry about, you know, grinding every day and worrying about that. I'm so invested in it. I read about it every day and still follow teams because I think that, you know, I kind of preached that at the beginning of September when I first started doing this. You know, get an edge early, look at teams, look at, you know, read profiles, follow beat writers, you know, watch videos, read about the teams that travel to Europe. One of the guys that I was thinking about early, even though he wasn't eligible to play, Right. Ivan Cruz Uceda from Miami. He played with him in their Europe trip, and he's very, very good. And he was a guy that I just was kind of waiting for. Of course, you know, he wasn't that great when he did come on, but you could see the potential, and he's somebody that's going to be very, I think, very good next year. So just little nuances and intricacies like that you can pick up just by reading an article or, you know, watching videos or following the team. So you put in that little bit of work now if you can, and it's going to pay dividends, you know, for you later. I mean, look at you. You just won the Survivor. And you're one of the most knowledgeable guys around. I'm sure you're reading articles all the time.
Yeah, I remember in the preseason, I would just kind of see how, you know, the spring or not the March or what do you call them, Midnight Madness, those type of games, and then the exhibition games. And I just looked at a couple box scores, but they really helped me. Like, I saw this Josh Hawkinson guy, like, just blow up. I'm like, who is this guy? All right, well, it looks like he can do stuff. So, I mean, I put him in some lineups, and then it turned out he really was good. And then I watched him play, and then it took a while for his price to adjust. So, yeah, you can definitely, if you keep your ear to the ground and kind of just check out news and stuff like that, it can definitely help you out.
Yeah, for sure. But I appreciate you coming on. Before we go, man, I wanted to get you, while you've already got you, I know you're going to be heavy into baseball. Can you talk to me for 2 or 3 minutes a little bit about your strategy and how you build squads for baseball for those that are listening?
Okay. I definitely don't have a great routine like I do for college basketball, but the good thing about MLB is it's very stat-based. They keep stats for everything. I think the biggest edge that people can get, I mean, it's no, I'm not breaking any news or anything here, but platoon splits, a lot of guys are really good, like a lot of right-handed batters are really good against lefties. So in general, you're going to want to have batters that are opposite hand as the pitcher. Some guys are better at it than others. On FanDuel, it's definitely a good idea to pay up for pitching most nights because it's just more consistent, especially in cash games. You're going to want to get one of the better pitchers because, you know, wins just wins alone are like 4 points. So if you can get a winning pitcher, you're already off to a good start. One thing you can do a lot of, one thing that I didn't do a lot at the beginning is look at the batting order. It's a big deal. You're definitely going to want to get guys in the top five spots most nights. I mean, on GPPs and, you know, other times when you're just getting salary relief, you can go low in the order. But yeah, like a guy like, let's say, on the Giants, Joe Panic, I think his name is. He's a second baseman. He's batting second lately. And batting in front of Posey and even Pagan and Belt, that's a good spot for him to get runs if he gets on base. So, yeah, I don't know. That's kind of my routine. I just kind of look at the stats. Just, you know, pricing is a big deal, obviously. Sometimes guys are in slumps and their price gets really down, but you can't focus too much on that because they might have, you know, run into a lot of good pitchers lately. And so don't be afraid to get a guy that's slumping a little bit. If his price is down low. And I think there's certain positions that I like to punt more. In, you know, a catcher, there's certain positions that I like to either go high or low. And catcher is one of them. Shortstop, I either like to get a guy like too low or get somebody really low. And a lot of times you can find good value in the outfield. So that's another position that I sometimes will get. I'd get a sub 300 guy in. But yeah, it's just a grind, especially in baseball. You just gotta, you know, I think if you're playing, I think it's good to mix up. I like to mix up lineups in pretty much any sport just to spread myself out a little bit, but especially in baseball because there are no sure things. So, I in baseball especially, I like to do 50-50s because, it's just hard to, like, consistently win GPPs and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's baseball.
That's awesome. Hey, I appreciate you breaking that down. I know that you grind that one pretty hard. Just wanted to get your thoughts on it. Appreciate you coming on and letting us know about your thoughts on transfers, recruits, early entries on the draft. We definitely have a big show planned, getting everybody together, figuring out a date to do kind of a recap and look ahead. So appreciate you coming on, man. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Great to talk. College basketball. I love this sport. And have a good one.
All right, take care, man.
All right, take care.
Awesome. We had the great Eric Forsey on the line with us. Great guest, as always. He's, of course, your 2015 Survive the Madness champion. Very knowledgeable guy. Follow him on Twitter if you don't already. Yeah, it's just a little bit about our thoughts, guys, about the upcoming season. I think that I've mentioned it enough times that you know that Maryland is going to be a heavy play for me. It'll be interesting to see which undecided recruits will end up going to Kentucky and the great developer of talent that is John Calipari. Lots of information still to come in. You know, more transfers, rotations, guys coming in. They'll inevitably be guys who did declare that pullback before the deadline of April 26th. So lots of news still to come. You guys keep coming on and listening to the show and supporting us. We appreciate it. We've got some fun stuff planned all summer long. But that is tonight's show. Appreciate those that tuned in and listening on demand. You can follow me, of course, at dubdeuces85 or email me at dubdeuces85@gmail.com. Great show. Appreciate it. Everybody have a good night.
Livewire.
June on a beat. June on a beat.
I done got blood tags over registration. Can't wrap an IV, I'm in the tape. Fuck it, I'ma take them all. Throw the bank, fuck it, I'ma take them all. Throw the bank, and on top of that, I got a whole sip of coke. Pull over for the boys, nigga, nope. Fuck it, I'ma take them all. Throw the dope, fuck it, I'ma take them all. Throw the dope, throw the dope.
They right behind me, bang on my lap, car smelling like dope. Cause I just left the trap, I got a cannabis car, let's see if it might work. I forgot.